Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 201.
This week on the podcast, like most college parties, a Nevada State Democratic Convention ends with the police turning off the lights and shouting, "Go home."
And Nebraska devotes 2016 to trying all the different electoral systems in hopes that we can find one that works.
Donald Trump is not considering any of the VPs that his campaign is considering.
And Trump and Paul Ryan finally meet, and in a classic U.S. diplomacy move, use this meeting to plan another meeting.
Plus, SCOTUS is sick of this nonsense and would rather you quit your bickering and just work it out yourselves.
And Grayson versus Reed is the Ollie versus Frazier of petty U.S. political showdowns.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
That's where we are, on the web. We're at episode 201 now.
My God.
We've surpassed 200
and now we're just... We didn't run off to the circus like we threatened to last week.
Oh my God, and I'm regretting it already.
I know.
It would have clearly been the right choice.
I know, it would have. Yes.
But here we are, we're back. It's Monday, so everything's awry.
It's crazy.
We were both out of town this weekend.
Yes.
And now we're here to report the important Monday news that we didn't report on when there was Sunday news.
What are you saying?
I don't know. It's words. It involves words, and I think that's what counts.
Yeah.
When you get down to it. This last weekend, there were some crazy convention antics that
happened in Nevada. The craziest. This was the only thing that was going on in my Facebook wall, by the way. It was the only thing that was going on in America. I know.
So that's why.
Well, not really, because I don't think any of the news reported it.
Well, fair enough.
But we will.
We will. And we'll lead with it.
The Nevada convention was a disaster.
Literally went off the rails.
It went totally off the rails. I mean, it had booing, it had screaming, it had police officers storming in, it had them turning off the lights
and shouting, "Go home."
Yeah.
We weren't exaggerating that in our rundown. That's a
no.
real thing that happened.
No.
It also had the chair of their party flee the scene.
That's right. Which was the only reasonable thing to do at a certain point.
The only thing she could do. Yeah. No, and it featured Barbara Boxer getting booed.
Yeah, what was she doing there anyway?
Like, don't think that you're going to get a warm reception at a random other state's convention
just because you exist. And then don't belittle them after that either. I mean, she was not...
Yeah, her response was not ideal.
No,
She, as someone who is a known Hillary supporter,
right.
her response was, like, pretty insensitive. I feel like if she had come in as just, like, an uninterested outside party and said what she said, then, like, maybe it would have been like, well, she's just trying to calm everyone down.
Right.
But when you come in as a Hillary supporter and then insist that in booing you, the audience is booing Bernie for some curious reason here's what happened. Let's back up.
Yes.
What happened was that in a very New York election-style move, the Nevada Democratic Convention chair... decided that for administrative reasons, 64 of Bernie's delegates were going to be disqualified.
Mm-hmm.
And the result ended up being that Clinton's delegates won by 33. This is in a field of like 3,400. So this is the state convention that's going to elect the delegates to go to the larger convention.
Right.
It works a little weirdly in Nevada because a certain number of delegates are chosen by direct vote. And so there were a certain number of delegates already awarded to Clinton and Sanders. She already had 13 and he had 10. This was for the remaining delegates, which are determined by the state convention as delegates show up based on delegates that were elected when these other votes happened.
Right.
So it's confusing. But after the sudden procedural challenge, she ended up getting more of the 12 remaining delegates than Bernie did. So she now has 20 and he has 15.
Right. And if we remember back to, because we've reported on this before, when they had their county conventions, remember, Sanders had flipped this.
Yes.
Because she won the actual caucus on the day of the caucus.
Right.
So, but then there were, I think, the county meetings, right? And Sanders
and
had apparently
didn't show
flipped.
Up.
And her people didn't show up. Right. So this seems like, you know, I suppose in her defense, she initially won. But, like, that's not, as we know, from both how the Republicans and the Democrats have been doing at these caucuses. Like, the original winner doesn't always win.
Doesn't always win.
That's a formality. Winning is a formality
exactly.
on the day of the actual caucus.
Right.
So there was also that level of, I think that's what caused so much of the upset, at least on the Bernie supporter side, was because A, they felt like they were being shut out, but not only did they feel like they were being shut out, but they feel like they were doing it specifically to sort of like get back to the original result when, you know, we had already sort of felt like we'd flipped it.
So what happened? So 64 of these delegates were disqualified, either because they weren't registered as a Democrat by May 1st or their information couldn't be verified. Six were ultimately allowed to be seated after their information was corrected or obtained. But the remaining 58 were shut out completely from the voting.
Right.
And so the crowd, which was a heavily pro-Bernie crowd because they had flipped all of these, right. local conventions,
yeah.
Got rowdy. And then Barbara Boxer got onto the scene and told them that they were booing Bernie Sanders by booing her, which is a curious thing for her to say because, as we've just said, she's a Hillary shill.
Right.
And also, what was she doing there?
Yeah. Well, shilling for Hillary.
That was her whole reason for being there.
Yeah.
Shit really hit the fan, though, when Roberta Lang, who is the Nevada party chair and is also a member of the DNC executive committee, called the results a voice vote, adjourned the meeting abruptly with a gavel, and just fled.
Right. Well, she called for a voice vote and supposedly took one, and it was clear who had won, and then basically like called it 50-50 and then was like, this is over.
Yeah.
Pretty much is what happened.
Then fled the scene.
Yeah, exactly. Literally. But not before calling security to come in and shut the fucking thing down.
Right. So then hotel security and police officers arrive, and there's a lot of social media images of this.
Oh, yeah, you
can see
it.
Of police sitting in
front
of the stage.
They're like standing at the front of the stage. Yeah. Like, it's a shocking scene. At a thing that is supposed to be, you know,
a borderline democratic exercise.
Exactly. Borderline being the key word, I guess.
In happiness. Yeah. So eventually, people wouldn't leave. Bernie supporters were still rowdy in there, and so they shut the lights off.
Yeah.
Told them all to go home.
So it's over.
So it's over now. But it was exciting while it lasted.
It was, it was crazy.
And ultimately, the results aren't that shocking because they pretty much line up with the way that voting actually happened.
Yeah.
In Nevada. This just goes to show you that you can't trust caucuses.
You really can't trust
caucuses. They're a bunch of useless bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
To go through all this trouble only to end up with the result that we started with seems like a lot of work for nothing.
I know.
Meanwhile, the Alaska convention was also this weekend. Very little drama. Minimal to no drama. There was a little drama we'll talk about, but nothing dramatic.
They took their cue from
Maine. And they passed a resolution saying that they wanted to abolish the superdelegate system and asking both their superdelegates to vote according to the will of the people and asking other states to join them in the struggle. Unlike Maine, theirs is non-binding.
Yeah.
So this was just a suggestion to superdelegates.
Yeah.
But this was, I think they were excited. This was their largest convention ever.
Yeah.
And it was, people came from really far away because they were excited about the candidates and they wanted to be heard. And so they were just sort of excited that there was that much enthusiasm about the race. And I think they sort of saw the superdelegate discussion specifically because there was one Alaska superdelegate who had kind of stepped in it a while back.
Yeah.
They kind of saw this as a sort of black mark on what was going to be a very exciting year.
I think that while this is non-binding, I think that it's still obviously important because for them say this, but it's also important in the sense that superdelegates are elected officials. So when you see people who are at these caucuses, who are the activist class usually, I mean, that's who is going to these meetings.
Right,
they're the people who are sort of like plugged in and want to make change. Like, those are not the people that you want to piss off either. So if you're a legislator from there who is a superdelegate, and you would go against the will of the people, and Alaska was very pro-Bernie, then that's not going to, you know, there's not going to be much good. There's not going to be much good karma for you in that.
Right.
So while it's non-binding, it's important enough because I think it forces all of those people to be like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's just, it adds another state to the chorus that will go to the national convention.
Right, and wants to do the same thing.
Be wanting to do this as well. So that's excitement. The minor excitement I was referring to was that several people walked out when Debbie Wasserman Schultz delivered the keynote speech. Also, I love that she went to Alaska to deliver the keynote speech.
From Florida.
What's she up to?
Quite a trek.
That is quite a trek.
I mean, she was probably in D.C., but
I mean,
that's still a trek.
Well, she's
anywhere to Alaska.
Anywhere
is a trek.
To Alaska is a trek. Alaska to Alaska is a trek.
That's right.
They were proud because people came from other parts of Alaska.
I know.
There was also a quote dance party in an adjacent building that was organized by a member of the Alaska House or something like that.
Oh, sure.
Who was against Debbie Wasserman Schultz's quote unethical actions. So he organized a dance party for next door. Did you know, though, that Maine's rule is actually not going into effect until 2020? I did not realize that. So that's boring. But good news. They chose Fairbanks as the next site of the 2020 Alaska Democratic Convention over Juneau. So, yay. I totally know where both of those are.
You do?
No. Meanwhile, last week on Tuesday, we also had the West Virginia and Nebraska primaries.
Yeah, blowout city.
Blowout city.
Yeah. Bernie in a landslide. And what's funny about this is that he won by, what was it, 16 points, 16 and a half points. She won that state in 2008 by like 40 points.
Yeah.
Now, I want everybody to think about the difference between this year and last year. 2008. And
Where a lot of disenfranchised poor white men would vote?
Well, yes, exactly. I think it's so interesting that she won by such a blowout against Obama,
mm-hmm.
the black guy.
Right.
And then got it handed to her this time around. So yeah.
I'm
saying that the state is racist. That's what I'm saying.
I think that that's clear. Sanders won every demo this time, though.
And I'm happy that he was the benefactor of that. But, I mean, that's what happens.
He won, it's a big coal state, and he won big margins in coal households because she had said in a town hall in March that was a CNN town hall that she wanted to, quote, put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business.
Right.
And she's never fully recovered with coal people from that.
Now, he wants to do the same thing.
He wants to do the same thing.
But he hasn't said it so insensitively aloud.
He hasn't said it so insensitively out loud, and I feel like he also is sort of like the way that he addresses the residual issues that would be the result of that kind of action are kind of like appealing if you're looking at a, you know, an industry that's kind of like falling out of favor and wondering what's going to happen to you,
right,
a person
exactly.
who works in that industry.
Well,
he's talking about having a safety net
so
that people in the coal industry don't die if the coal industry goes out of.
And she is too. She says this very inelegantly. Yes,
yeah.
exactly.
Well,
because
she's not doing it effectively, and she's also not sort of like talking about it in broadly enough.
Right.
Like she really doesn't address poverty issues broadly enough.
No.
And that is, I think, when you say something broad, like you're going to put the coal out of business,
right.
and then you can't say something broad, like, but we're going to make sure that your family is taken care
right.
of, then you don't, you're not having the right,
exactly.
you're not having the right effect on this.
Well,
situation.
She probably said that. And then she probably talked for 45 more seconds where she talked about like, policy wonky things about what she was going to do.
You didn't know what she was talking about.
And you didn't care.
No, exactly.
Because that's what she always does.
Yeah, she's having a hard time connecting on specifics with people who don't care about specifics.
Right.
And that's what we saw in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Also, I would guess that as racist as they are, they're probably pretty misogynistic and that didn't hurt Sanders in this situation.
No.
Hilariously, they're sort of confused and adorable. 40% of voters in this primary said they want the next president to be, quote, less liberal than Obama. But hilariously, of those voters, 62% voted for Sanders. It may not matter at all because about a third of Democratic primary voters said they'd support Trump in November. And I think that's really why you see the connection between the Sanders popularity in a place like West Virginia is very much tied to the types of things he shares with Donald Trump. The free trade talk. I think that when we're sort of looking at how we can reach out to working class white men, where Clinton's advisors have noted that she needs to gain some support in that area. She doesn't need to win white men.
Well, and she's not going to.
And she's her working class voters.
Yeah.
White working class voters,
right.
but she does need to do better with them in order to win.
Right.
And I think that she's going to have to sort of figure out where those similarities are that are driving support for, you know, there's this, the Trump thing makes sense because it's this sort of macho thing. The Sanders thing is very different than that, but it sort of like hits a lot of the same, points for that subset of voters.
Well, and that is, you're absolutely right. That is a huge, and we're going to talk about some specific poll numbers from some states that have a lot of angry white men in the Rust Belt who are,
mm-hmm.
you know, who
yes,
are pissed off
are.
Enough. And you're right. If Trump gets enough of those people out to vote for him,
in some key places
who have been put out of work because of what he's going to tell them is because of a lot of these free trade bills, which she's obviously tied to.
And the class that Clinton is a part of, that he's a part of, but not accepted by.
She needs to mend with some of these people in places like Ohio and in Pennsylvania, which the Democrats always win and will continue to need to do so. This has been added to my level of fear fantasies about this election because she's going to get blown out enough by angry white guys in Pennsylvania.
And the rest of our votes don't count, so it doesn't matter.
Right. So, anyway, we'll get to that
later. The
only
states that count are states that are filled with angry working class white people.
Right. But there were a lot of Democrats who saw that number of Sanders supporters saying that they would vote for Trump and spiraled out of control because they're like, oh, party unification, blah, 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 blah.
These,
and
these
like,
were not
but
people that were going to vote with us anyway.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. And not only that, like, this should show you why Sanders is doing well and why those people would go to Trump. Like, you have to think about, it's not just because they hate Hillary because Bernie called her unqualified. There's like a thing that has happened. I just hit the microphone. There's a thing that has happened in their life to get them to this place. Yeah. And it's not just general hatred of Hillary Clinton. Like, that's not reality.
But in an economy where poor people are doing worse than they, and they're not, nothing's getting better.
Right.
Like,
so
there are larger forces that are shaping. Right. And this is
so unless she addresses that, then I would, if I were them, I would vote for Trump too. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that he has a better answer than she does, but like,
it goes back to the information vacuum that we talk about. Exactly. If she's not explaining it to them in a way that makes sense, then they're making up their own answers. And those answers are being provided by Donald Trump.
Bingo.
You know? I mean, this is, as much as I know that people, especially Hillary supporters, when I speak to them, often talk about how it's unfair that there's this burden of communication on us that isn't necessarily on the right because they don't necessarily offer solutions a lot of the time. I sort of feel like that's true, but that's a burden that we have to take seriously. We can't pretend like we don't have the responsibility to try to communicate our more complicated positions in a way that makes people understand them and want to support them. Bernie Sanders has been promoting much simpler positions, and that's why people are responding to them. For a lot of these things, there's a lot of issues in which he and Hillary really don't differ that much, but he just sounds like he's more into them than she does. Yeah. You know? I mean, I think that's when she isn't able to sort of like, you know, she has to sort of like mince words a little to get around the support of a certain industry that has, you know, whatever. Like, do both of them ultimately want to allow fracking to go on places? Probably not, but she can't say it and he can say it. And so his position is simpler than hers.
Yes.
Her position is, I would make it very hard for everyone.
Right.
His position is, I would not allow it.
Right.
Like, we need to figure out a way to like combat the Donald Trumps of the world who are talking about winning with our own talking points. And what her campaign has never been good at is figuring that shit out.
No.
They're detail people.
Yeah.
And their details are often boring. And you don't want to listen to them because who cares about boring shit?
Right.
It's like, who has time? Meanwhile, Donald Trump won the West Virginia primary in a way that you would if you were already the presumed nominee.
Right, exactly.
With 77% of the vote.
Yes.
It's adorable that 18,000 people still went to the polls and cast a vote for Ted Cruz.
I know. I'm wondering if they had early voting there.
They must have. But also, I mean,
because that's a lot.
You don't have to stop voting for people that you want to vote for.
Right.
I mean, if Bernie Sanders dropped out right now, he's already on the ballot. I might vote for him.
I would.
It's like, why not?
Like, who else?
I've been waiting to vote for Bernie Sanders this whole fucking time.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not going to let him not being in the race stop me.
I know, exactly.
So, I mean, but I like, what goes through your mind as a person who's like, I'm going to go and I'm just going to make sure they know that I was for Kasich?
I know.
It's really important to me that nobody think that my vote went to Donald Trump.
That's right.
It was going to Kasich.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Nebraska, so Nebraska had a Democratic and GOP primary, but only one of them was binding.
Right.
The GOP
the Democrats
primary,
already had a caucus.
The Democrats already had a caucus that was binding. Then they just thought, hell, we'll throw a primary too. Why not?
Yeah.
We love voting. This
is
one of the more Democratic states out there, apparently.
That's right.
Donald Trump won the Republican primary in a not surprising turn of events. There, though, Ted Cruz got 18% of the vote.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Also, well, Ben Carson got 5% of the vote.
I was going to say that's
Marco Rubio got 3.6% of the vote.
Yeah. That's a Cruz-friendly place.
Oh, for
sure. I
mean,
I realize
I know. They were probably
out,
holding
but
their nose. I mean, if you are the presumed nominee and only get 61%
of
the vote, then
that's true.
You're not doing super well.
Yeah.
In West Virginia, 58% of Republican voters felt pretty confident that the party would come together ultimately, but only 50% of Nebraska voters did.
I'm wondering if that has anything to do with
how they dislike Donald Trump.
Well, how they dislike Donald Trump.
Them would vote for him.
Right, that's true. But also, that's where Ben Sasse is from.
Oh, yeah.
So he's probably on the front page of the newspaper on an almost daily basis because he's like the leader of the Stop Trump movement
now. That's
could be part of it.
They have their own news, maybe.
Yeah.
It's cute. Meanwhile, the vast majority of GOP voters thought that Trump would beat Clinton in a general, but nearly 1 in 5 Republicans said they wouldn't vote for either one of them in the fall in Nebraska. So that's cute, too.
It's a lot.
Meanwhile, the Democratic primary in Nebraska was hilarious.
Right.
Hillary Clinton won.
Right.
You might recall Bernie Sanders winning the caucus,
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton won the primary. The victory amounts to nothing because it's just
no
a bizarre expression
allocated of
preference. She doesn't get any delegates. And the whole exercise does little more than prove that caucuses are pretty dumb.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, I also can't imagine that they got the turnout that you would need for something like this. Because, like, who thinks to vote in twice in
a primary? I was going to say, we don't have the raw votes. Well, and also, like, I feel like if you were going to vote for a candidate, you would be voting for Hillary in this, because the Bernie people are like, well, we won the caucus and that's what matters. Like, the Hillary people might be being like
we need to,
let's get out there.
And, so already, Bernie won, March 5th was when the caucuses were held, and Bernie won those by 15 points. So he's already getting 15 delegates to her 10.
Yeah.
But it's cute that they tried again. I don't know. Yeah. I've called a lot of these cute recently. These results have been cute this whole time. Meanwhile,
here are these polls that I sort of
referenced that Brent was talking about. Yeah, if you're still clinging to the idea that Hillary Clinton wins this election in a blowout,
we've been proving is not the case with
matchup numbers this whole time.
Right, and we gave you a lot of specific reasons last week on the podcast why that probably wasn't going to be the case, and that was just based on our feelings and emotions.
Yeah, it was truthiness. And now, it was our own truthiness.
And now we have math.
Yeah, we've got math now. Quinnipiac did a general election poll that they released on Tuesday that matched up Clinton and Trump in Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. So three battleground states.
Yes.
They are running essentially neck and neck in Florida and Pennsylvania. Clinton edges out Trump by 1 point in both. Yep. So it's 43 to 42. Trump is leading in Ohio by a much wider margin, 43 to 39.
Yeah.
I mean, much wider being 4 points, but still much wider than 1 point.
Noticeable.
He's doing better in Pennsylvania, though, than either of the most recent GOP nominees. He's doing better than McCain or Romney did.
Right.
The two candidates are about where their party predecessors were at this point in both Ohio and Florida. One of the interesting and not surprising results of this poll is that Bernie Sanders fares better than Clinton in all of these states in matchups against Trump.
Interesting.
He even beats her in Ohio 43 to 41.
Right. So that's like a 5 point swing or 6 point swing because he's ahead.
Yeah. So what they found were that there were really wide gender and racial gaps among voters. So there's not really a lot of room for either of these two to make up votes because there's not like going to be a whole sea change of like men suddenly being like, wait a minute, this guy's crazy.
And this is why. Another, add this to the list of reasons why I don't think that she's the right candidate.
No.
If that being said, the most important thing is going to be to get out the vote.
Yeah.
And
that's the one thing she can't offer us.
Right. That's literally,
obviously, white voters consistently favor Trump, whereas non-white voters consistently favor Clinton. That makes sense. But what's interesting here is that the gender gap, which is very massive, favors Trump. So while Clinton in Pennsylvania has a 9 point lead among women, Trump has a 21 point margin. Trump has a 21 point margin among men. In Ohio, Clinton is up 7 points with women, but she's down 15 points with men.
Yeah.
In Florida, she's up 13 points with women, but down 13 points with men. So in all three of these states, the gender gap is currently benefiting Trump, not her, the first female candidate. That's a little alarming because the one thing she offers is being a different gender than usual. I mean, that's one you would
as think, Trump says, that's the only thing that she offers.
That's one of the notable and historic elements of her candidacy, and currently she's losing in the gender gap.
Right. She needs to be ahead more with women than she is currently.
Why aren't all women saying that they'll support Hillary Clinton? Who are these Trump women?
Right.
They confound me. But I think you have a harder road to toe with women than you do with men. There are so many women that are financially dependent on men still in a way that men are not to women. So there are a lot of women living in households kind of not, if not dominated by men, then sort of in some way controlled by a patriarchy of sorts.
Yeah.
And so because of that, it's women aren't really in a financial and social position to make the same independent decisions about who to vote for that men are a lot of the time. And so you really don't get as much bang for your buck, you know, getting out the vote for women if you're running against some machismo idiot.
Right.
Who like is getting men all riled up because he's trying to make everyone win and basically appealing to all of their socialized baser instincts.
Yeah. That's well said.
Yeah. Men are a little simple, Brent.
What?
I don't know if you've heard this. But both, by the way, have basically unfavorable ratings among everyone. So when we talk about these ratings, we're not talking about, like, both Clinton and Trump are hated by everyone.
Right.
They're just sort of universally disliked people.
Yeah.
A majority of voters in certain states say that Trump would do a better job of handling the economy, but in Florida and Ohio, they said he would be best at dealing with terrorism. Clinton is considered more intelligent and having higher moral standards than Trump in all three of these states. but they also say, and they say that she has the temperament to handle an international crisis, but interestingly, is apparently not the best qualified to deal with terrorism. Although, I mean, I wouldn't call her the best qualified of anyone to deal with terrorism.
Well, I wouldn't either.
Because I connect her actions to the direct result. Like, the direct result of her actions has been more terrorism.
Well, I know. I think you're going to hear that from Trump, too. I mean, his actions,
today
too.
Today that he released his plans for running against the Clintons, and they were everything you expect. They were just all the plans you would think. You don't even need to read the article. It's like, my plans are like...
all the dirt.
Yeah, calling her, you know, Crooked Hillary and...
Totally.
Then...
Yep.
Talking about
Clinton Foundation.
Talking about, you know,
how she ruined women's lives, who cheated on their bill. Cheated.
Whatchamacallit, like, the not the Panama Papers, that scandal from the Clinton era.
Oh, Whitewater.
Whitewater.
Oh Lord.
I was trying to talk about Whitewater.
Oh God. Just because people. Shit? Right. Nobody. Well, because it just takes you back to a time of Clinton scandals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what it's...
It was a very scandalous time.
That's
the
what
Clinton
it's
era
designed
was,
to do.
Was quite scandalous.
Yeah.
As you recall.
But he also... I think it's going to be interesting, too, speaking of terrorism and just more broadly foreign policy, because he gave that super rambly foreign policy speech, which we talked about.
Which was
and
bad.
It's totally
it was a
bad
speech.
Right. But the one thing that I think is interesting about that is that while he's not yet making any sense on foreign policy, he also has sort of an odd gift that
for
he can...
talking for long periods of time.
Well, no, but I mean, he has an odd gift in front of him in the sense that he can run to both her left and her right
yeah,
on foreign
that's
policy.
True.
And that, I think, if he can figure out how to do effectively, could also be very bad for her, too, because he can sort of tie her to Obama foreign policy, which mm-hmm. Will get the right all riled up.
And
he can also hang Iraq around her neck, because he has been saying that was a bad thing. So he can sort of,
Yeah, that's true.
He can get on all sides of her on foreign policy, which is rare that you can run
and
to
that's, considering run that to that's her
someone's
standout
different
issue,
direction.
Because she's a former Secretary of State running for office. That's especially concerning.
I have cooked up all of the terrible scenarios about this election, by the way.
I feel like the Clinton campaign should be calling by now.
Nobody ever calls.
No one ever calls. You guys, we've been calling this for so long. It's crazy. Meanwhile, the Veepstakes talk is in full bloom at the moment.
Sure
and this
is.
Week, we got a nice injection of hilarious, maybe accurate, maybe
inaccurate
Trump speculation.
Nobody within the Trump campaign seems to know who is on the short list.
Yeah. The resident genius and member of Trump's VP search committee, Ben Carson,
yes,
told the Washington Post that the list of potential Veep running mates includes Chris Christie, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, Marco Rubio, and Sarah Palin.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Carson said for himself, he, quote, understands he's a lightning rod of controversy and that, quote, Trump doesn't need help sparking fires. So he's not planning to run. Palin said she didn't want to be a burden for Trump either. So she was on State of the Union on CNN and said, I just want the guy to win. I want America to win. And I'm such a realist that I realize there are a whole lot of people out there who would say anybody but Palin. I wouldn't want to be a burden on my ticket. And I recognize that in many, many eyes, I would be that burden.
Well, she's right there.
She's right there. Also, you might remember that last week or the week before, she vowed to end Paul Ryan's political career for not immediately endorsing Trump. So she's kind of on the shit list with the GOP.
Yeah, she's going to canter him.
Yeah, she's cantering him. On Tuesday, Rubio said that while he would honor his pledge to support the eventual nominee, he is not interested in being Trump's running mate, which is great because Trump then on Sunday tweeted that he tweeted the Washington Post report on potential VP candidates is wrong. Marco Rubio and most other mentioned are not under consideration. So he specifically called out Rubio as someone who was not
right.
under consideration.
He used him as the one name.
As the one name.
reference directly.
Exactly.
yeah.
Kasich also has said that he has no interest in being the vice president. He said that in March on the Fox Business Network. Cruz is the only one who hasn't specifically demanded he not be considered, but he's also still giving speeches around and not in any way addressing Trump. Like, he never mentions Trump. Trump also said that he said on Morning Joe that he's leaning towards running with a politician.
Right.
Someone who can help him get stuff through the House so he doesn't just have to do executive orders, he said.
Like, yeah, okay, exactly. I know.
With that.
Yeah.
The media is like really enraptured with the idea of him running with Sarah Palin. There are obviously a ton of articles about that. And Brent and I want to go on the record as people that are also enraptured with the idea of him running with Sarah Palin.
Yeah, we're in favor of this.
We're in favor of it 100%.
Yeah.
If you, I can't think of a better running mate.
Think of all the Sarah Palin. Think of all the Sarah Palin speeches we could be having for the next 5 months.
Can you imagine a Trump plus a Sarah Palin speech? That's nonsense squared. That's
right.
Too great.
It is.
That it's too exciting.
Yeah.
So we have our fingers crossed.
They would have all the words.
They would have all the words and yet none of them.
Exactly.
Trump and Paul Ryan also met last week finally to bury the hatchet.
Yeah, didn't do much
to bury the hatchet other than potentially plan another meeting for their staff to meet so that they personally don't have to meet again.
Right. They're done meeting with each other.
That was enough.
Yeah.
Earlier, they released like a joint statement after saying that they had, quote, taken a very positive step towards unification.
Yes.
But that's all that was said.
Yeah.
Paul Ryan did not in any way try to endorse Trump.
Didn't endorse, no.
Trump didn't say anything about whether or not, you know, he had become ready to support Ryan's agenda.
Yeah.
He said last week that he wasn't ready to.
The fact that they didn't leave the meeting saying that they wanted to kill each other is a step in the
I have the sense that in Washington, this was the equivalent of them saying that.
Sort of. But it was their previous statements were worse, is all I'm saying.
We've taken a positive step towards unification.
Right.
We certainly haven't taken a negative step.
Right. In the sense that we're not sending angry tweets about each other.
We're currently in the same room and no one's been murdered.
Right, exactly.
Positive steps towards unification.
Yes.
So they're going to meet this week and talk about God knows what. About how they can come together on whatever dumb issues they're talking about.
Yeah.
Paul Ryan has been politicizing this pretty well. He's been sort of making statements to the press. Donald Trump just hasn't commented since the joint press statement on Thursday. So, and there are no details on when exactly this meeting will be. So it's like when you're like, yeah, no, we should totally get coffee. And then you don't in any way take steps to plan that coffee.
Yeah.
So instead you just exist in a perpetual state of almost having coffee with someone. That's what I feel like is happening here. Also, there was a big article in the Times about social conservatives who are starting to fall in line with Trump.
Oh, sure.
They mentioned Concerned Women for America.
Oh,
the Susan B. Anthony list, which oddly is an anti-abortion group. Faith and Freedom Coalition, Family Research Council. They're among the groups that are suddenly willing to fundraise and campaign for Trump.
Of course.
So we're going to see some exciting, confusing people talking around a lot of issues in the upcoming months as we see these religious nutjobs try really hard to come up with why Donald Trump is the right candidate for them as a person who is not even known in his own church.
My guess is their reasoning is going to be general hatred of Hillary Clinton.
Sure, that's a good one.
And Supreme Court.
Yeah, yeah. I think,
and not that we know who Trump is going to nominate to the Supreme Court either. Though.
That dedicated to their pet issues of making sure that gays can't marry and abortion is illegal.
I mean, I agree with you, but
he doesn't give two shits about those things. He's paid lip service to both sides of those issues in the past.
He might also nominate somebody terrible to the Supreme Court.
Oh well, I think he definitely would. I mean, just because he doesn't care about the Supreme Court,
right? Exactly.
He believes himself above the Supreme Court. Oh God. Oh yeah, you were saying that you thought that was his game a while ago.
Yeah.
Can you imagine anyone worse than Ted Cruz for the Supreme Court? Like an ideological purist of the sort that isn't even... That's not even smart to be. Like, Ted Cruz is, like, not a smart man. Like, he's, like, a sociopath.
I know.
But, like, it's not smart to not be able to, like, see why cooperation is important and why the other side of an issue is important. Like, he's lacking, like, empathy, but also, like, lacking a kind of intelligence. A big kind. The kind.
I know. Yes.
The one kind of intelligence.
That's what I was going to say. I'm like, which certain kind are you talking about?
In any case, I'm just saying that you can go to Harvard and Princeton and still be a dumb person.
Right.
And that's what Ted Cruz is.
Right.
You can be a dumb person with fancy words.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's what Donald Trump is as well.
Exactly. He's a dumb person with unfancy words and made up words.
Great words.
Great words, though. They're great words. They're not fancy, but they're great. There was also a big article in the Times about Trump and women, where the Times interviewed like 50 women who have dealt with Trump in business and other private situations
in
the past.
And as specific as this was, because they did actually speak with all of these people, it was also sort of like, duh.
Well, right.
You know, yeah. It's like when they do, it's like when they perform a study to find out, you know,
cancer makes your family sad.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, that's what this article was.
Yeah. Right. Yes, I was sad when I got cancer.
That's right.
Like all people.
Yes.
Yes.
We didn't need to spend money on a study for that. And we probably didn't need to write this article. I mean, it's great. But it's great that we did, I guess.
Because we need the words in print in the paper of record.
Right. Yes.
And I think specifically, I think there's like an element of catharsis for reports on Donald Trump from New York outlets specifically, because they've been chasing his idiocy for so long. And like, it's like
they're finally starting to get a handle on it.
They're like research. They're like so ahead of the curve on research that they're like, we can find 50 women who've dealt with Trump. We're the people that can do that. It may not surprise you to find that Donald Trump has had a checkered past when it comes to interacting with women professionally and personally. There were women who said that he had encouraged them in their careers and helped them move forward. And I believe that because he's a businessman above all else.
Yeah.
Many of those women also said that he had a habit of making unprofessional comments about women's appearances in the office. So, and also he was even, I think that he was voted in his yearbook ladies man because he was dating models even then.
Ugh.
That was in his military school yearbook, Red, by the way, God. His boarding school that he went to.
That shouldn't be a category to be voting on, by the way. It's such a weird, like, who's the ladies man? Like,
well, if you can, in a military boarding school, what are they up to?
Yeah.
They're not, I don't even know how you would find a ladies man in a military boarding school, because were there women there?
That's true.
How do they know?
Yeah.
So in any case, it was an interesting article, though, and I recommend reading it.
Sure, it wasn't girly man?
It wasn't girly man.
No? It was ladies man?
It was ladies man.
Okay. All right.
Too bad.
Yeah.
If only there had been a category for short-fingered man, we could have...
Yeah, exactly.
Then we would know exactly what was happening.
So Donald Trump picked a fight with our closest ally.
Yep. Already. So diplomacy, check.
Yes.
Him and David Cameron are in like a hilarious feud.
Yeah.
Where David Cameron called him stupid, divisive, and wrong.
Yeah.
So Trump went on Piers Morgan and said that they were unlikely to have a great relationship and said, I hope to have a good relationship with him, but it sounds like he's not willing to address the problem either. He said it twice in a row. The full quote was insane sounding. I didn't even pull it because I was like, this is too redundant.
No, it was crazy. I know.
And then went on to say, well, number one, I'm not stupid, okay? I can tell you that right now. Just the opposite.
Right.
Number two, in terms of divisive, I don't think I'm a divisive person. I'm a unifier. Unlike our president now, I'm a unifier.
Right. He didn't address being wrong. He only addressed being stupid and divisive.
I would contend that there's no argument that he's that he's not wrong.
I know.
I don't see
that being. There was nothing he could do to refute that point.
We'll just forget. We'll sweep that one right under the rug. And by the way, if you're wondering how us not having any sort of SCOTUS nominee is affecting America and life in general, we now have the answer. Because this is the time of year that SCOTUS starts to release all their rulings. And what we're finding is they're just like not bothering to have rulings anymore. No. They punted on two issues this week. One was there was a ruling regarding the transgender bathroom situation, or it would have been applied to the transgender bathroom situation. Yeah. It was announced over the dissent of Clarence Thomas that the court's not going to hear U.S. student aid funds versus Breonna Bible, which was a case that could have altered a previous ruling that is what is allowing that's requiring public schools to allow transgender students to use the bathrooms corresponding to their gender identity. The case that it would have overruled was a case from 1997 that said that the judicial branch should defer to a federal agency's interpretation of their own regulations. But despite the fact that Roberts and Alito both took opposite opinions on that case, they did not join Thomas in dissenting on Monday. I think they were just sort of like, this is going to be a split decision and we don't have the energy.
Yeah.
So the case was... was the main case that the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals relied on when it upheld the rights of a transgendered boy to use the boys' bathrooms in Virginia. And there's no federal regulations specifically to this point, but the Education Department had issued guidance indicating that that was supposed to be how transgender students were treated.
Right.
And so for any schools receiving federal funds. Right. So that is how the federal agency interpreted it, and they decided not to touch that.
Yeah.
Then there was a very controversial case.
There's been a lot of back and forth on this.
This issue I'm sick of. I'm with them. I would have just told these people to fucking work it out.
Yeah.
Because, so you have these religious nonprofits and contraception coverage.
Right.
This is another Obamacare case.
Yes.
The court did not reach a definitive ruling on a challenge to the Affordable Care Act that would have allowed religious nonprofits to opt out of contraception coverage.
Right.
We've been hearing a lot about this. We heard a lot about it with companies that wanted to do this, with Hobby Lobby. And, you know, we've been, this issue never seems to go away.
Right.
But in a certain sense, Scalia dying literally saved thousands of women from losing their contraception coverage in a direct way.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can thank him for dying so conveniently, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
The decision was only 3 pages long and basically was like,
can you guys
just fucking work this out?
Right. They sent it back to the lower court.
They sent it back to the lower court. Well, they had already ordered that the administration and the parties involved in this case just reach a compromise.
Well, right.
And that didn't work.
And they've, exactly, because they've been trying to do this, and the administration has put forth so many things that should be acceptable to them, basically.
Yeah, these religious, this is a politically motivated issue, because, these religious nonprofits have no incentive
and
to
they
accept
already,
reasonable
and
accommodations.
And they already don't have to supply women with, they just basically like have to then like allow them to like get it through the federal government basically.
Again,
and sort of like it's,
they are not providing direct
coverage. Exactly.
It's not like they're paying money to pay for the contraception.
Correct.
Coverage. They're paying money to an insurance company that covers that medication.
Right.
And the federal government will cover it if the insurance company won't. They just are angry that their employees can get it.
Exactly. Which is
so mean.
Crazy. Exactly. Yes.
Go screw yourselves.
Yeah. So there's already something out there in the world that they should be fine with.
And don't believe in contraception.
Then they don't
have to get it.
That's right.
But if you hire a janitor who just needs a fucking job, why prevent them from having no access to contraception? That seems
crazy.
Doesn't
make any sense.
It's bonkers.
Yeah.
But speaking of good news related to Obamacare, the ACA now offers transgender protections.
Oh, great.
This was sort of a spot of sunshine in a sea of bad laws about transgender people.
Yeah.
But on Friday afternoon, HHS issued a new ruling that that guaranteed that transgender people could not be denied health care by professionals that receive federal funding, and said that it is discriminatory to refuse them access to transition-related services.
Nice.
So this is the first time that the ACA has banned discrimination in healthcare on the basis of sex.
Nice.
And they interpreted this to include all aspects of gender identity, so transgender people can get services. And that includes things like, if you are a transgender male, you probably still need to get breast cancer screenings.
Right.
And, like, men do not get breast cancer screenings covered by the ACA, but women do. But if you are a transgender male, you are still at risk for breast cancer, so you are able to get mammograms.
Yeah.
That's
great.
With everyone. So that's good.
Love it.
And it also said that insurance companies can't deny coverage to therapies, surgeries, and other procedures related to gender transition.
Nice.
So that's good.
Sweet.
And it did not include a religious exemption.
Good.
Which is, we shouldn't be including.
Screw them.
People who are religious don't have to transition to a different gender.
No, they don't.
There's no rule that says that just because this is offered, you are required to be a different gender than you are.
That's right. It's like
just
gay
like
marriage.
You didn't have to get gay married.
You don't have to get an abortion.
You don't have to get an abortion. You don't have to do any of these things.
No.
You can if you choose to.
Right.
If your children choose to also, and you are religious, like that is your issue with them. That is not the state's issue with you.
Bingo. Yes.
Anyway, in final news.
Oh my gosh. This was so good.
You guys.
We've been pushing Alan Grayson on you for a long time.
Not just because
of his politics. Although a lot to do with his politics.
He's got good politics, but he's also got good entertainment value.
He's crazy. And if you're looking.
He's got the it factor.
Yeah. Yes. He really does. Yeah. He got in like a showdown with Harry Reid this week. Like,
sure did.
In a fight that he specifically picked with him.
He picked a public fight.
Went to Harry Reid.
Congressional Progressive Caucus.
Right.
No, Harry Reid came to speak
to
the Congressional Progressive Caucus.
Right.
This rarely happens. They were excited to strategize with him and whatnot. And in the process of it, all the members who were there were going and like introducing themselves to Harry Reid.
And as we've told you, Alan Grayson is running in that Florida primary right now. Mm-hmm. And he is not
He's
not the DNC choice. And Harry Reid has already been on record as saying back in February that Grayson has no moral compass and he used his status as a congressman to unethically promote his Cayman Islands hedge funds.
Right.
He's under ethics investigation for that thing right now. He insists that there is nothing to them, but that investigation is definitely still going on. So you can, as much as I love Alan Grayson, you can see why a Harry Reid
does not want
Alan
to be
Grayson
associated with
to
him.
Be the general election candidate in the Florida Senate.
But so in any case, every member takes a turn to speak to Reed, and it was Grayson's turn. And so he asked Reed if he knew who he was. Mm-hmm. And Reed said yes. And he said, "Say my name, Senator. Say my name." So Keith Ellison tries to shut the whole thing down, but Grayson was not having it.
Yeah.
He started angrily waving a printout of Reed's comments about him that called on him to drop out of the primary.
Yeah.
Against Patrick Murphy, who is the representative from Florida, or another representative in Florida, and said, you know, and refused Keith Ellison's advances. So he said, "Why'd you say that?" Insisting that his statements were false.
And Reed says, "I want you to lose. It's true."
Remember, Reed used to be a boxer. He's not scared of anything.
Yes,
he's a prize fighter.
Yeah.
So the other members were kind of pissed because they rarely get a chance to sit down with Reed. But the best part of the whole fight...
He hijacked
the meeting.
Yeah, the meeting. Yeah.
The best part of it is that Grayson has been calling Reed a smearmonger.
That's a good
one.
Which
is a word that we're going to start using, I think.
Obviously.
And he also called Patrick Murphy a Republican sock puppet.
He is, by the way. He's not wrong about that.
But Murphy has been saying that he's acting like Donald Trump. So that's a good comeback.
Donald Trump is currently the presidential nominee.
Exactly. So what it takes. So Grayson has been endorsed by a bunch of progressive groups, but the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee endorsed Murphy. All the big Democratic in-office people have endorsed him. So Reed's office was contacted to comment on this situation and said, "Alan Grayson decided to be disruptive to the embarrassment of his fellow colleagues. Senator Reed took the opportunity to express his low opinion of Congressman Grayson to his face and reminded him that the reason Senator Reed has said that Grayson is under ethics, has said that Grayson is under ethics investigation and appears to be running a Cayman Island hedge fund from his congressional office in order to line his own pockets is because these things are true, as established by 74 pages worth of evidence from the Congressional Ethics Committee."
And
schoolyard,
Alan Grayson responded to this either by a tweet or something, but he said, "I have a low opinion of Harry Reid's low opinion of me."
Oh, yeah.
Which is
the best.
That's what we're telling you,
you guys. This is...
Get on the Alan Grayson
what it's made
bus.
Of. Yeah, no. Alan Grayson is going to guarantee not only your progressive change, but also great tabloid items. Those are the two things we're looking for.
That's what this podcast
is all about.
Politics and gossip.
So, get on board.
We should really be contacting Alan Grayson because...
I know.
This is
we're the exact people that he's campaigning to.
Right. Can't vote for him,
Unfortunately. I would. Oh, I'd vote for him a million times.
A heartbeat, yeah.
Yeah. Just as I would never vote for Julia Brownlee, I would. Another person who's not running in my district.
I know. I would vote for Alan Grayson. Right. I wish I could vote for anybody in her district.
I know. Anybody who's not her.
Exactly.
Yeah. She's, for the opposite reason, she's come to our attention as someone whose district we'd like to vote in.
Yeah, exactly.
But in any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
It's only getting better, you guys. It's only getting better.
Yes. This week, tomorrow, actually, when you're listening to this podcast, you're also going to be getting results from Kentucky and Oregon, by the way.
That's right. Yeah, we didn't include polling numbers.
Well, I couldn't find any because I was going to. And so that's mysterious. But, whatever.
It'll be a mystery. Right. It's exciting.
It is.
We will talk to you next week on our regularly scheduled time.
Yes, Sunday.
And that will be exciting. Monday. We'll talk Sunday. You'll hear us
Monday.
Anyway, have a good rest of your week.
Bye.